welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. On this week's show, we discuss which broadcasters may be interested in acquiring one of the most major sports broadcasters in the United States. And we have a lot of news in this week's episode about everything from NBC sending their crew to England and USL signing a major deal. It's been a big week for soccer this week, Kartik. First of all, with World Soccer Talk, we released a brand new ebook, which is the What the World Cup Means to Me, which features, it's a free download available through the website. It has contributions in there from everyone from Rebecca Lowe, Simon Cooper, Jonathan Tannenwald, Kartik Krishnayer, myself, and many others, Tommy Smith, lots of really Ian Joy, Danny Higginbotham, a lot of great contributions in there about what the World Cup means to each individual. So definitely check that out at the website worldsoccertalk.com, as well as we've got the World Cup bracket. It's never too early to start. We're in April. Yes, the tournament's not until November. Yes, we won't know the final teams in that competition, the final three, until June. But it's never too early to start planning. We also have the World Cup TV schedule on the website too, which is lots of articles and details regarding that on worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, it's been an interesting week though, because it has been a big week for soccer. The interesting thing for me personally, we're probably not going to spend a lot of time on this one, but all right, Champions League, UEFA Champions League on, right? On Wednesday, you had Real Madrid against Chelsea, you had Villarreal against Bayern Munich. I had those two games on, but the match I was watching more closely was Burnley against Everton.
Yeah.
And to me, what does that say when you've got a game, a relegation battle happening at the same exact time as the Champions League, but most of our attention is placed at Turf Moor instead of Stamford Bridge?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, the same for me. Absolutely. That was the match I was focused on. I wasn't even sure I was going to watch Champions League, and as it turns out, I did keep that on the television, probably because it was on broadcast television on one of my TVs, but focused really on Burnley-Everton and also on a couple of matches in the Championship, which were critical. Both Bournemouth and Fulham were playing, as was Nottingham Forest. So a couple very big matches for promotion. And what does it say? I think it says, one, the Premier League has most of our attention, that the races within specific domestic leagues are probably more entertaining than first legs. Keep in mind, these are first legs of Champions League matches, which seem to pit the same teams again against each other over and over again every year. That's part of my issue with the Champions League. I mean, I'm finding this season, I've taken your advice, Chris, and the advice of some of our listeners. I'm finding Europa League much more interesting, much more to my liking. Champions League, quite frankly, has not kept my interest. Even with Man City, who's the club I support, I'm much more concerned about how they do in the league and in the FA Cup than how they do in Europe. And secondly, I think Everton. Everton is a story, right? This is a club that has spent very few years in its history outside the top flight. They have the longest current top flight run of any English club outside of Arsenal, who have not been relegated since the 19-teens, Arsenal. The last relegation for Everton was in the 1950s. And it's a club that has spent themselves into oblivion, right? They have overspent so dramatically in the time period between 2017 and 2020 that it now makes it now kind of changes our critique of big spending clubs, right? We're now looking and saying, hey, maybe Chelsea and Man City, there's a method to the madness, which I firmly believe. I think those are both actually very well run clubs because they spent, and they spent with a plan. Everton came into money in 2017, came into some sponsorships, which are also now in question because of Russia, et cetera, with USM, et cetera, that if you don't know what you're doing, having an excess of cash can actually be a hindrance, because what Everton has now is a bunch of high-wage players, a manager who's come in now 2 months ago, Frank Lampard, who still doesn't know his best, anything near his best 11, and a club that is in the position, if they get relegated, to potentially be the next Leeds. And that I think has captured a lot of us. I'm thinking about Everton more than I'm thinking about any of the teams in the Champions League. Maybe that's just me, but I don't think I'm alone. I think anytime the Everton conversation comes up with reference to relegation this year, there's more interest in it than, hey, Champions League's just kind of the same thing. So I don't think you and I are alone with that.
Yeah, so there's two things to this. First of all, this is a rarity. Usually, the Premier League, Serie A, all these leagues in Europe are not allowed to have games scheduled, top-tiered games scheduled in the top-flight division at the same time or pretty close to the same time as a Champions League day. However, because of COVID, because of all the postponements of games, a lot of these leagues have to find ways to make up these games to get them all played before the end of the season, especially with in preparations. You mean there's going to be a break in November and December for the World Cup. These leagues are on a tight schedule. So it's a rarity for the top flight. Now, you and I, Kartik, watching championship games, oftentimes championship games are on at the same time on a Tuesday or Wednesday's Champions League. And sometimes I'm watching Swansea City on one screen and then Liverpool or Benfica on another screen. But that's the first thing. The second thing about this, though, too, Kartik, is that honestly, this really, to me, yes, the Everton story is fascinating, as is Burnley, Everton more so, but this really shows the power of relegation, a relegation battle. If this was Major League Soccer and you had, Cincinnati against Inter Miami, nobody would care. There's no accountability if those two teams finish bottom of the league. Nobody cares, right? It's just, start again next season, get a draft pick, off you go. But this one, with it being a relegation battle, it means more. And this is not in the playoffs. This is not in the final, weekend of the season. This is, towards the end of the season. We've still got a month and a half to go or so. But this was a really must-win, meaningful game. Danny Higginbotham, before the game starts, says, whoever loses this game, I think, will get relegated. So the result ends up being a really good game to watch, too. 3-2 to Burnley. Burnley scoring a late winner. Everton now on the precipice of relegation. A lot of it, I think, to me, depends on what happens with Watford. If Watford continues the current run of form, which they're not a bad side by any means.
They can pick up. I think they've had some really tough fixtures to start Roy Hodgson's tenure. It gets easier this week, beginning with Leeds. Although Leeds is in good form also. But I think Watford might climb out of this. I've said all season, Chris, Burnley would not get relegated. I've stuck by that. I have a lot of faith in Sean Dyche. I see now it coming together. A Weghorst coming in is a big bonus. Cornet coming back from the Cup of African Nations. And Aaron Lennon, what a renaissance. What a career renaissance for this guy. I think Burnley stay up. So it's between Watford potentially and Everton. And I don't like Everton's chances. I mean, the thing that I go back to, Chris, that I've talked to about a lot the last couple of months, is that if Roy Hodgson did want to come back into management, why did Everton hire Everton had a managerial vacancy before Watford did, right? Ranieri was sacked after Benitez, although I think it may have been the same weekend, but I think the next day. And right away, Watford had an agreement in place for Roy Hodgson. If Roy Hodgson was available and willing to take a short-term gig, why didn't Everton call him? And they could really rue that mistake.
Yeah, but looking ahead to this weekend, I mean, that's my game to watch. My recommendation of what to watch this weekend is Watford against Leeds United. Jesse Marsh, I think, has done an incredible job from the get-go. This is a tough situation to get into. A lot of pressure, a lot of question marks about him, mostly from the British press, mostly from the tabloid press that doesn't really know much better. But I think, there's a potential here, Kartik, for finally an American-born manager in the Premier League in England to establish himself. Still a long way to go, but establish himself. And I think next season could be huge for him and huge for the United States in terms of reputation, recognition, and acknowledgement that this is a very soccer-savvy country. What do you think, Kartik? What do you think about Jesse Marsh and the job he's doing at Leeds United?
Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, I think he's a phenomenal manager. I think he's a guy. Look, I've actually in my other roles in football, have gotten to interact a lot with people who have played for Jesse Marsh, who have been around him during his career, both his playing career and his coaching career. He's now managed in five countries now, when you include England. And he's a guy that has an incredible knowledge and thirst to learn and has picked up principles of football wherever he's gone. So he's a guy that I think is uniquely prepared for a challenge in the Premier League. He also has a very clear philosophy. Now, I know a lot of Man United fans may say that philosophy doesn't work at that level, because Ranieri's philosophy very much mirrors the philosophy of Jesse Marsh. But at a club at the level of Leeds, especially inheriting a fit squad from Bielsa, a squad that was uniquely prepared to play a high pressing game as Marsh would want them to, and to go through the sort of training drills Marsh does during the week in training. I think it was a brilliant appointment, and I think he's going to be at Leeds United for a significant period of time. I think he's actually a very good fit for that club and for its philosophy, and also for fans in Yorkshire who really appreciate good football. I know a lot of the reputation of Leeds is made by the movie The Damned United, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, right? A lot of it's made by Brian Clough calling them dirty, dirty Leeds and saying all sorts of negative things about Don Revy. But the reality is, by the end of Revy's tenure, Leeds was playing pretty good football, contrary to the narrative in that film. And also, Leeds has typically always been a attack-minded side through the years. And I think of Howard Wilkinson's teams that culminated with him winning the league, right, in the early 90s. Those were teams that played good, free-flowing football. Guys like Gary Speed that made our heart stop, right? How good he was. I think he's a good fit, and I think it'll be really good for the reputation of American managers and the United States in general, because it's been very, very simple to write off anyone who comes out of MLS is not very tactically savvy or not very sophisticated about football. But Marsh is certainly someone who can help debunk that stereotype.
So, yeah, so that one's Watford against Leeds, 10 a.m. Eastern time on Saturday on Peacock. Kartik, what's your game of the weekend to watch?
Yeah, it's kind of predictable, but I just went with Man City Liverpool 11:30 a.m. Sunday, which is on USA and not on Peacock, but NBCSports.com. It's a match that is very, very much I think heading in Liverpool's direction. They played much better football of late. Manchester City seems very labored and laborious in how they break down opposition. They can't break down teams that play in a low block. Obviously, Liverpool a little more open. But it is potentially a title decider. I say potentially because remember in 2014, this same matchup actually at Anfield later in the season. Well, no, actually it was the same weekend. I think it was April 12th. The same matchup. And it was the weekend of the Hillsborough anniversary, and that year would have been, what, the 25th, so it was a particularly poignant Hillsborough anniversary. Liverpool take a 2-0 lead, Manchester City come back 2-2. There's a company giving the ball away. Liverpool win, they go clear of Man City in the table, and then still there was calamity ahead for Liverpool, and City caught them the last week and won the title. So this is not a title decider, but it is a potential title decider. And so it has to be the game I recommend.
Okay, so let's move on to some other Premier League news, and that's in the TV streaming news, Kartik, and this leads right into what you just mentioned, and this is NBC's plans for the weekend.
Yeah, so and it's usually this time of year anyway, so it really works out this year that NBC is sending their studio team to the UK. Obviously, the last few years with COVID, they haven't been able to do this as typically as they have, but generally, it's around this time of the year they send the team over there. Their match commentary team of Arlo Whiteley, Dixon, Grand Lasso, always on site. But now you're going to get Rebecca Lowe, Robbie Earle, Robbie Musto, and Tim Howard to hosting special pitchside shows beginning with the Friday match, with the Wolves Newcastle match on Friday. And you will also have a number of features that are taped live around this. And I have to assume, Chris, because we've had this in past years when NBC's traveled over, some things that they tape that are canned for future weeks that might be really, really useful and poignant for us.
Yeah, my take on this is I'm excited that they'll be there, but it's starting to become a little bit predictable. I mean, you've got Robbie Musto calling the game, I think, with Ola White, and you've got Robbie Earle also calling a game with Ola White, and of course you've got the crew, I think Arlo and Lee Dixon and probably Graham Lasso for Sunday's game. It's becoming a little bit formulaic. I'd like to see them kind of mix things up, do things a little bit differently, but it's still a big weekend and it still says a lot for them to be there, so I'm looking forward to seeing that, and hopefully we'll get some good interviews and some good coverage out of that. Now, Kartik, a story that we wrote about at worldsoccertalk.com this week. It's really interesting. It's actually more so in regards to American sports, American football in particular, and that is that I think Troy Aikman and Joe Buck leaving Fox Sports to go ahead and join ESPN for, I think it's Monday Night Football. But what the speculation is, and this is was reported by Front Office Sports and some other industry publications, is that this is a sign that Fox Sports is cutting back, is making significant cutbacks. And we've seen this on the soccer side, too, because this season in particular, we've seen MLS productions by Fox Sports on FS1 on Sundays not sending as many crews to the stadiums to actually call games from the stadiums. We've seen actually with John Strong, who is, FS1's, Fox's number one soccer commentator, lives in Portland, has called a couple of games or a few games from with Portland as the home team. But instead of being in the stadium, was probably just a few miles from his home, he's actually calling it off a monitor. So whether he's going to being flown to LA to call the game off a monitor, off a TV screen, or using some other studio, but he's so close, but yet Fox is unwilling to go ahead and pay to have a production team go out and cover a game. There's other instances too where Fox has been cutting back. So the speculation in the story is that Fox Sports may be considering selling its sports division. And the challenge with this, Kartik, is who does it go to? I mean, ESPN would love nothing more, I'm sure, to acquire the rights that Fox Sports has. Just on the soccer side, if you look at on the soccer side, World Cup, Women's World Cup, Euros for 2024 and 2028, Copa America, Gold Cup. I mean, just those alone, that portfolio of soccer rights just by themselves, and of course, the 2026 World Cup, the biggest of them all, that is worth billions, right? But ESPN, I'm sure, I mean, I would think that the government DOJ would not allow a merger for ESPN to acquire Fox Sports' sports division. So who could you see it going to if Fox was interested in selling their Fox Sports division, Kartik?
Well, first off, I spent a lot of time this week. Actually, probably my main focus this week has not been soccer, although the last couple of nights, because of U.S. Open Cup, I've been really soccer-centric, but has been evaluating Disney as a company because of things going on in Florida. And a big part of that analysis is, as Disney got larger with the asset purchase a few years ago, Fox got smaller. And one of the things that talking to analysts on background, they had told me is that because Fox became a much smaller and more conservative company and really dependent on their newspaper ownership and their TV news channel ownership, the sports division, they don't have the sort of revenue coming into the entire company anymore to sustain bidding wars on sports rights without it coming directly out of the pocket of the Murdoch family. So that to me is very, very interesting and coincides, dovetails perfectly with what's happening with Joe Buck and Troy Aikman leaving. So consider that for a minute. They've acquired all these rights you talked about already. They've already shelled out the money, but they don't really have enough capital or cash flow based on what I'm being told on background to continue to bid on sports rights, not to mention the production and paying talent and what you were just talking about, Chris. So I think it's inevitable based on that those that piece of analysis, which I've heard from multiple people in the past week, in comparing Fox to Disney. Now, I don't think regulators would allow Disney to acquire it, right? That cuts ESPN off. I think NBC, Comcast is kind of a different company. So it would either be another company that's spun off, or maybe this is an opportunity for the Warner Media, the new Warner Media Discovery spinoff from AT&T to acquire a lot of sports rights that they may have lost bidding wars or not bid on. They're now a more robust company. They can look at maybe the ROI if they bought the Fox Sports division and see where it goes. But yeah, I'm not surprised by this based just on my own conversations, Chris, which is about something completely different, which is the battle between Disney and the state of Florida right now over legislative issues, that in that conversation, you can't get away from talking about Fox because of the asset purchase and how that changed the culture of Disney and similarly made Fox a smaller company and a company not really able to generate the amount of revenue to sustain bidding on. The other thing to note, Chris, is they've outlaid more money once again to keep the NFL and to acquire some of these summer soccer tournaments of the Euros, most notably. So they're really at the bare bones. This is why also in the larger context of MLS, for the listeners out there, don't be surprised if they're not even in the conversation, which I believe they're not really even in the conversation anymore to keep MLS rights. It's not some sort of shocking revelation. It's just a reality of where Fox is as a company right now.
If you look at all of the major sports broadcasters in the United States, you look at ESPN, you look at CBS, etc., all of them have something in common, which is a really strong, robust streaming service. And Fox doesn't have it. Fox, the closest thing that Fox has to it is Tubi, which is very much like Pluto TV, which is a free ad-supported system, kind of a platform streaming service that has the potential to stream live sports in the future. But from discussions I have had, Tubi's not ready for live sports. So, but Tubi's really, right now, not really a sports-centric streaming service. Fox does have investments or has had investments in the past in companies such as Hulu and Fubo TV. And that's the part of it that I see is kind of the most potential is a company like Fubo. Now, it may not be Fubo themselves acquiring Fox Sports, but I wouldn't be surprised if they'd be involved in trying to form some type of partnership to acquire those rights. So we're talking about soccer right now, but of course, there's a ton of other sports that Fox has that are incredibly valuable. But just on the soccer side of things, if you saw, like, say, a Fubo, if Fubo is able to acquire the rights to these competitions, and don't forget, too, that Fubo has part of the Euro 2024 and Euro 2028 in a partnership deal with Fox Sports already. So they're already pretty cozy to get together. Fox will be broadcasting most of the major games from those competitions, at least for now. And Fubo is going to be streaming the games that Fox doesn't show. So that's the potential. I think I wouldn't be surprised if there's a major streaming service that comes along, or it could be an Apple TV. It could be an Amazon or somebody that tries to say, hey, you mean looking at the rights that Fox Sports has, and they've done a great job of acquiring rights, will we go ahead and put a bid in to try to get that? Because that could be massive. ESPN would love nothing more than getting the World Cup back. And like you said, Kartik, with regulators and monopolies, it's unlikely, right? But I'm sure ESPN would love to get the World Cup. But maybe there's a way to, I don't know, maybe Fubo, in partnering with some other companies, can make it happen. And then, Kartik, one more news item this week, and that's from USL.
Yeah, so USL announced a partnership with 11 for exclusive global. This is a global deal, rights to the USL W League, which is the new professional league, technically designated as a second division women's professional league in the United States, which will begin later this year. And the W League, by the way, is going to kick off in May, but eventually we'll be playing on a sort of different calendar than NWSL, just for those who know. But this is a global deal with 11 and a big boon for 11. I have some personal insight on this deal that I'm happy to share with anyone who's interested if they DM me on Twitter at KKFLA737.
Yeah, it's interesting context too, because Mike Cujo, I mean, 11 Sports did a really good move in acquiring Mike Cujo, which was the streaming service that showed a lot of lower league soccer and a lot of games that you couldn't find anywhere else. And effectively, this is the W League on USL on 11 Sports. Effectively, is on that Mike Cujo platform, which is no longer called Mike Cujo. It's 11 Sports. So, smart move there by 11 Sports and USL to do this global streaming service and to make those games more available. Moving on to the listener mailbag, this is a question that came up last week, Kartik, and you weren't on, so we weren't able to ask you it. But it comes from Dave and talking about the NWSL. And Dave says, did I hear correctly what Kartik said? NWSL produces games for CBS? I have credited CBS for a fine job covering NWSL, but perhaps credit belongs to NWSL. Or did I misunderstand?
So NWSL has a white label production studio that they have paid for that does the games for CBS Sports for CBS Sports and for Paramount Plus. These games though are overlaid with CBS graphics, and there is CBS talent and sometimes additional cameras for the national games, which are on CBS Sports Network and on CBS over there, like the match this weekend, the California Derby, if you will, the San Diego LA game, which was on CBS over there. So the basic production is handled by the league. There are additional elements of production that CBS adds on their own, and including talent. Although the talent generally is the same talent that calls games for NWSL in general. But so there are additional overlays. There are additional studio programs that are produced by CBS. But the basic production all comes from NWSL, and they build on that. This is kind of different than how MLS is handled by the networks, where MLS does not produce the games and those networks do produce them, which I think is another complicating factor. I guess this is what led to the question, right? We discussed that a few weeks ago on the podcast, that MLS is going to have to commit to doing that in this next package, in all likelihood, the next broadcast deal.
Yeah, it's interesting watching that CBS coverage last weekend on the network, the over-the-air network. The viewership was 456,000 people watching that game, San Diego against Angel City. The actual experience of watching that game is so different than watching, you mean, whether it's MLS or any men's soccer league. It is good. It's good production, but it's so different, right? It feels different. It looks different. It's at a slower pace, it seems, like when I'm watching it. But yeah, great viewership numbers there for CBS and NWSL. Things are heading up, looking good for the league there. Now, Kartik, next question up is Bill. Bill says, why haven't more cable networks and streaming providers picked up CBS Sports Network? It's been several years since CBS picked up several soccer properties, including the Champions League, NWSL, Serie A, CONCACAF qualifiers, yet CBS Sports Network still does not have as many carriers as the networks such as FS1. It's also hard to find on some streaming platforms, and when it can be found, it's on a higher tier than most cable, most sports networks. What's the deal? I think part of it, though, too, Kartik. I think part of it is it's almost like we're all feeling that at some point it's going to go away. It's kind of a similar fate to NBC Sports Network. How long is this network going to be around? It's also, I think, the other part of it, which is huge, really, Kartik, and this is probably a bigger factor, is that it's not rated. So it's not Nielsen rated. So I think for a lot of properties or a lot of people looking at it, they're like, does it really get a kind of a large viewership? What is its viewership like? CBS Sports would know. We and the rest of the industry doesn't know. And any other thoughts about that one? Why it's not?
Yeah, they don't have major sports properties outside of soccer, and the soccer stuff, as Bill mentions, is recent. Last 3 years, they've been acquiring soccer rights, but they don't have they have second tier college sports, right? Second tier conferences in the major college sports, in men's and women's basketball and in football, right? They don't have significant the Power Five, Power Six conferences, although they do have studio programming, right, to complement CBS's coverage of those leagues. And then they don't have baseball, NBA, NHL, NFL. And again, their soccer acquisitions are recent. Now, I think their soccer acquisitions may put them more in a window for cable companies and distributors than they were before. But they really are a second-tier channel. And that's why they're also not in that that tier where you get FS1, where you used to get NBC Sports Network, where some cable companies even have FS2 in that tier. And they do not have CBS Sports Network there. However, I should mention that when CBS Sports Network acquired the UEFA Champions League rights, they were bumped up a tier on DirecTV, and it was directly related to that acquisition. So maybe they're in more homes than they used to be.
Next up is Chris on the topic of streaming. He says, I recently read an article on the Sports Illustrated website that basically bashed the recent deal between Apple TV Plus and Major League Baseball and why streaming is the wrong way to go for leagues. I should point out that the writer of this article basically has the same role with Sports Illustrated that you guys have at World Soccer Talk, but with baseball. While I understand the writer's viewpoint and frustration with streaming, it is going to be part of the sports media landscape for years to come across all sports. As a soccer fan, I have found that streaming via ESPN+, Paramount+, Fubo, and Peacock is the easiest way to watch the games I love while also cutting out my cable bill. With this article in mind, my question to either of you is, what are your thoughts on streaming in general? For me, Kartik, personally, I mean, I love it. I mean, like, there's a lot of things I can do with streaming that I can't do with traditional cable television. A perfect example of that is multicast or multiview. And these are different types of streaming services. Well, basically not services, features, really, of if you have an Apple TV product, the actual hockey puck, you can, for example, with ESPN Plus, you can watch up to four games at once. With Fubo, you can watch up to two games at once. I think that feature is also available on the Roku with streaming through Fubo. So there's a lot of things you can do, and there's a lot of features and functionality that you could have never done with cable. What about you, Kartik? What's your take on streaming?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's... It's more flexible, and you can watch things on demand than cable, but it's also still more temperamental, right? I mean, I still, again, this week I had a little soccer gathering over the weekend with a few friends that I hadn't seen, I think, basically since before the pandemic. You know, maybe I had seen them more recently, but still. And the complaint about Paramount Plus in particular, about having to exit the app and then re-enter the app in the middle of matches, was prominent, and everybody shared it. So that's a thing with streaming, unless the streaming provider has a perfect mechanism, which even ESPN Plus, as much as we compliment them, they're not perfect. I think Peacock has gotten better, but there's still bugs, there's still flaws, and then we just mentioned Paramount Plus, those being the big three that are covering soccer now. HBO Max will be in the space at this time next year. I think that there's still a slight advantage to cable, but that will go away over time, right? The technology, all of these buggy features, all of these kind of clunky things with streaming will be solved, I think, by the time we negotiate the next set of rights deals over the ones that have just been negotiated now or are still being negotiated in terms of MLS.
Yeah, I think part of it, too, is the technology. So whether it's 5G, whether it's fiber, whether it's basically really strong, great broadband speeds, such as the speeds that you would see in South Korea and other countries, they're way more advanced on that side of the fence in terms of internet, and that will help a lot of the issues. I mean, but Paramount Plus, yeah, it's almost like a given now. It's almost like, you know, reach halftime of a game, okay, exit out of the app, go back in, and then it should be okay because it kicks me out too. And also some of these features and kind of things that don't work as well as we would like them to work, some of them are based on the actual hardware too. So like Roku may not be as good as Apple TV, and and Amazon Fire TV has some quirks in it too. So there's not one kind of consistent, say, cable box like in the past, where everyone has the same cable box and everyone has that kind of controlled environment. But yeah, for me, I mean, I'm a big fan of streaming, and Chris, yeah, it's interesting too that this baseball writer was kind of against streaming. But I can see pluses and minuses for sure. On last week's podcast, we talked a lot about Major League Soccer, and actually the week before that too, in terms of the upcoming TV deal. Raid says, for me, the biggest problem with Major League Soccer is that the regular season games are not that competitive for the most part. In European leagues, every point is big. Playing all those games and then playing playoffs one or two legs, that way is not attractive for me. I love soccer, and I watch many different leagues from around the world, including MLS sometimes. But if the MLS rights go to a streaming service that I don't have, it's not going to be a big deal to lose access to MLS games. Thank you again, and I hope you guys talk about MLS changing its current system. I know that is not going to happen anytime soon, but maybe that's one of the solutions to improve the quality of soccer and TV ratings. And I think, Kartik, that's where we are right now with Major League Soccer. These are topics we've been talking about for years, probably, 10 years. 10 years of pointing out holes in the system. And the biggest hole to me is just that regular season. It's not meaningful. It's one of those things that if you miss the first 5 months of an MLS season and then catch it in the summer, maybe a month or two before the actual playoffs start, you don't miss much. You don't miss much at all. And I think where we are right now is that the fans know that. The broadcasters know that, and the way that Major League Soccer is set up is it's set up, conceived as a traditional American sports league. So it's set up like Major League Baseball or NFL in particular, because a lot of the owners within MLS come from NFL. And that system is all well and good within American traditional sports because you don't have a lot of competition from overseas. Soccer, you have more competition from overseas than any other sport. And I think the gig is up. I think a lot of fans, the broadcasters themselves, everybody knows that the current system with Major League Soccer is not as good as it other leagues. There's better leagues out there. There's better players out there. There's more competitive games out there. There's more meaningful games out there. So where we are right now, I think a lot of these issues for the last 10 years that we've been talking about, MLS has not addressed, has not changed any of those. And I think it's caught up to them.
So, yeah, you've talked about the pro-rel piece. I agree with that, but I would also add, to me, very, very much the calendar piece. And as long as MLS operates on a calendar which is contrary to the top leagues in the world, I know there are people who argue, well, there are leagues in Latin America that follow a similar calendar, sort of, okay? Not completely true, but sort of. That's going to limit your ability to interact in the international transfer market and have the top players come here. So I think the calendar is a serious issue as well that no one wants to address, and it's a red herring, right? You know, the excuses people make anytime you try and bring it up. I mean, at least a pro-rel discussion you can have. The calendar change discussion, there's fear, like players and fans will freeze to death when they don't. You don't even get through to first base in terms of talking about, okay, we can schedule strategically. Now, in this void comes USL, who is very serious about shifting their calendar. We mentioned the W League deal with 11 earlier. That's going to involve a likely calendar shift as that league evolves. And also their top divisions on the men's side are looking to shift the calendar. Now, granted, they have more teams in the Southeast and the Southwest than MLS does. It might work a little better for them geographically, but that will be a very interesting moment, because I think once you start aligning your transfer windows with Europe, even though USL runs a second, third, and fourth division in this country, there are some interesting possibilities that come out of that. So, yeah, I agree with you, Chris, on promotion and relegation, and I would also say calendar change is a big part of it.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not just promotion and relegation, but it's also just in terms of just the way that the league is structured. You know what I mean? In terms of playoffs. And it's not that there's anything wrong with playoffs, but there's got to be a better way to do it. And I think Liga MX is probably an example where MLS years ago, maybe 5 years ago, should have said, okay, let's do an Apertura and a Clausura, and let's figure out a way to kind of break the season in half and make it more meaningful. And they've never done anything. And that's the thing. That's the issue, is they've been so focused on expansion, bringing more expansion teams into the league, that at the same time that they've been so focused on pumping money in that way, the quality of the league has become diluted, and they haven't addressed the big issues. And now, at a point in time where they need a major TV deal right now to be able to bring in the future stars to grow this league, now they're in a tough position.
Yeah, on the league split, I dealt with that firsthand. I was the communications director for the NASL when we decided to do that. And I did not anticipate the backlash. I did not think it would...
From fans?
To me, it was just a very... From fans, wow. Yeah. It was a very logical change because we had to keep this American thing of playoffs. But we had the same problem at NASL. Teams were getting into the playoffs with it had happened two successive years when we decided to split the season, where the team that was the bottom seed had gotten to the final, the bottom seed that made the playoffs. In fact, one of the years they won the championship. It was a great run. It was a great story. Wonderwall, which Minnesota United fans still sing, came out of that run that they made to the NASL final, so the championship in 2011. When they finished sixth in an eight-team league and then won the championship. It was a wonderful, wonderful run. But we thought, okay, clearly our regular season doesn't mean as much as we'd like it to mean. We can't get rid of playoffs completely or championships completely because a championship game, that's just kind of the American sports thing. We were trying to get a television deal at the time. So we split the season. You remember, Chris, you and I sat down and talked about it. I think you were one of the people I first sat with before we announced it to talk about that we were going to do effectively an Apertura Clausura. We called it fall spring. And there was a huge backlash from the fans. Which I never quite comprehended, and we ended up having to change. We kept that format through the end of NASL, but then we then had to go back to like a more expanded playoffs because people just didn't accept it, they didn't understand it, they didn't like it, and the idea was to make every game more meaningful.
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be a backlash from fans whenever you make major changes. So in some ways, it's almost like you have to tune that out to a certain extent. But I could see, I mean, for an MLS season, having, say, an Apertura, an Apertura winner who wins that championship, and then the Clausura winner that wins that second half of that season, and then having those two teams play against each other in an MLS Cup final. And to me, that would have more meaning, more relevance, and definitely would keep me more interested in watching the league throughout the season itself, or the split seasons. All right, let's move on. Last comment here, and this is from RJ in regards to the topic of podcasting. RJ says, now that the World Cup qualifications are nearly complete, or now that they're almost complete, right? I got to thinking about TV coverage for Qatar 2022. Is there any chance that major networks would employ podcasters to supplement their coverage? Personally, I find many soccer podcasters far more insightful than most mainstream TV coverage for soccer in the US. How long until a major entity taps this resource? Personally, I'd love to see the guys over at Total Soccer Show or Scuffed get a chance to provide coverage. I also think that World Soccer Talk crew would add to US telecasts. So I think Kartik, I think this has already happened. I mean, Men in Blazers would be the perfect example. A couple of guys doing a podcast with connections within the industry and blowing up. Not everyone's cup of tea, but actually doing really, really well. And they had been doing this actually for quite a long time before NBC Sports hired them. They had been working for ESPN. So I think that's one example there. I'm trying to think of any other examples. I know way back in the day, back in probably 2006, Kartik, I approached Fox Sports at the time and came up with an idea of doing kind of a podcast, and they were interested at that time. It never materialized, but that was a long time ago. But in terms of RJ's point about podcasts playing more of a role in soccer coverage. I think it's happening more in the UK, though, Kartik. You look at BT Sport, and it could have, a lot of the guys from the Guardian podcast. I'm trying to think of, like, Michael Cox is one person who was more of a writer than a podcaster, but also appeared on many podcasts too. I think for the US soccer coverage, it'd be nice for them to get out of the box and think outside of the box and pick up some podcasters who can probably add a lot more insight than a lot of these analysts that we know.
Yeah, and I think also there's supplementary things going on YouTube. The Athletic with TIFO is really, really good supplemental stuff, particularly about European club football, more of an emphasis on the Premier League. But there's they have a lot of Bundesliga and Serie A stuff in particular, and La Liga also. And then the podcast or the YouTubers that we see covering the U.S. men's national team. I don't always agree with those guys. I generally don't agree with most of those guys, actually, about the U.S. But they clearly have created a following and are stimulating conversation. So I do think that this is something that mainstream media will look at as we get close to the World Cup. Now, is it going to be a World Cup only thing? Who knows? Like with Michael Cox, it was originally a World Cup only thing in 2010, and then he proved so popular, such a hit, that he was retained beyond that and created more of a following around club football than about around international tournaments. But the World Cup was the gateway, was the entrance for him.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, too, that a lot of these YouTubers or podcasters, too, actually get more downloads or more listens than a lot of mainstream broadcasters for, say, pre-game coverage or halftime coverage for a lot of these games. So, yeah, good point there, RJ. All right, if you have something you'd like to ask us, we'd love to read your comment out on air. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, heading into another weekend of football from around the world. There's a lot to look forward to. There's so many matches, and I'm sure on Friday on the World Soccer Talk Twitter stream, we'll have Kyle Fansler giving his weekend preview too on by video. But Kartik, heading into a big weekend, what should the fans do, and what are you going to do?
Enjoy your football.